It was very clear today, and there was a hard glare off the sea as I was coming over in the barge to make this record. From the boat, the Japanese base on the Shortland Islands was quite plain. If they had petrol to fly their planes with, they could be over our heads here within 10 minutes from the seaplane harbour at Faisi. Not much further away, on Bougainville, the enemy-held airfields of Kihili and Kara are still serviceable. But how they must curse as they look at their own planes, carefully camouflaged in the revetments, lying idle and useless, starved of the one thing that can make them deadly, aviation spirit. Just as their machines are starved of their sustenance, so also are the unhappy garrisons of these once formidable bases withering from lack of food and medicines, and maybe from the dawning knowledge and realization that their vaunted new order in the Pacific is a shallow and brittle thing. But I started with the intention of telling you something of this little place, unknown as it was to all of us a year ago. There are two main islands, Mono and Sterling, both of volcanic origin, Mono the larger being 7 to 8 miles across and roughly circular in shape. It is far from flat, crossed by ravines and ridges, and rises to 1,100 feet. It is clad in very dense jungle, as formidable even as that heartbreaking country on Guadalcanal, back of Death Valley. Sterling, the smaller island of the Treasuries, is separated from Mono by a channel half a mile to a mile wide. It is a low island, about 3 miles long, but hardly more than 1,000 yards wide at any point. We came in today past the village of Falamai, or what is left of it. It was there, last year, that the Japs had their headquarters. Their ammunition dump was in the native church. Prior to our attack, it had been reluctantly agreed that it would be necessary to shell the area where the church stood, for the main enemy gun positions were there also. It was a pity to have to destroy what the natives had so laboriously built and furnished. But, as fickle fortune would have it, that day last October, not a single shell hit the church, which stood unscathed through the whole of our assault until the village was in our hands. Then the Japs, who had retreated to the nearby hills, brought down mortar fire and fire from mountain guns. One chance shot struck the church, exploded the ammunition, and all but destroyed the building. Since hostilities ceased, however, New Zealanders have worked there for months, and as a result, just a few weeks ago, a new church was opened. Alongside it are the rows of the combined New Zealand and American cemetery with the flags of the two countries flying overhead together. A little further around the coast, on the opposite side of the island from Falamai, is Soanatalu. It was there that one of the fiercest engagements that troops of the division have had with the enemy took place. You perhaps have read the account of it, how the Japs, driven deep into the jungle from Falamai, lay low by day, but night after night, launched attacks on the small New Zealand garrison that had occupied the Soanatalu area. There was the night when 40 of them infiltrated right through to the beach, where they encountered our last line of defense, a blockhouse manned by only 10 men. The battle, fought mostly with grenades, raged around that little strong point throughout the night in pitch darkness, but it held out. By light of day, the bodies of Japanese were strewn everywhere, piled one on top of another. We suffered casualties also, but on a very much smaller scale. Here it was that our men first encountered the full meaning of Japanese night fighting, and where they came to realize that the unseen enemy is the more deadly. But there is nothing that New Zealanders cannot adapt themselves to in quick time, and in a few nights our men were playing and beating the Jap at his own game. But to those of you who have not experienced it, it is too hard to describe what it means to lie for hours in a foxhole, in the Stygian darkness of the jungle, ears and eyes straining, with nothing but one's nerves for company, and an unseen enemy within a few yards. Now I find, contrary to my first intention, that I haven't told you very much at all about the Treasuries. Maybe I can condense a little of it. Perhaps, if I had more time, I could tell you of the unpleasant things, the stifling heat of the jungle, the depressing knowledge that this patch of sand and this muddy road is the only area where one may work, rest, think, write and play. There is nowhere else except out on the sea. But I could tell you also that there is some real beauty in the curve of a coconut tree in the moonlight, and I have yet to see the equal of the sun setting out over the coral sea. And there is the comradeship of one's fellows, which seems to be strengthened by the knowledge that the men of this division have played their part. There is a certain pride about it. But if finally you care to question me more closely, I will tell you, confidentially, that I would trade all of it, all the beauty of the Coral Sea, all the attractiveness of old Mendana's Islands of Solomon, for a mere half acre in a road I know called Peach Grove in Hamilton, where I know of a fair-sized lawn that could do with the mowing, some cricket bats that need oiling, a sunny veranda, and a few books I might read again.